Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. I'm Eric, and with me is Kiwi and BP.
Hello.
Hello.
And special guest Kate.
Hello.
Second special guest ever. Now we're big time. We've had more than one special guest.
Who is the kid and is usually dragged into these things.
Yeah.
So she's equally thrilled to be here. What are some of your favorite games? So we have an idea of what you like to play.
All right. Well, I'd say I'm a big fan of Sherlock or Sherlock Yay. Files and the Castles game, which
Castles of Mad King Ludwig.
Was there a follow up to that?
Nope. That's good. All right. And today we're going to be playing Sabotage, designed by Tim Fowers of Burgle Bros, Paperback, Fugitive, and Hardback, and Jeff Krause. The artist is Ryan Goldsberry, who does all the art for Tim Fowers games. And it is published by Fowers Games. Sabotage is a game of team stealth tactics. Two teams compete with spies trying to save the world and the villains trying to stop them. Spies must be clever and quiet while the villains must deduce and hunt. The game is played on a 4x4 grid. Both teams have their own copy of the map separated by a divider. Four dice are rolled each round. I'm doing rules. And all players program their moves simultaneously by spending those dice. The villains execute their program moves first, followed by the spies. When the spies take a move action, they must announce some information about the local location of the villains who deduce. All right, Kiwi's going to get into this later. To win, the spies must hack 8 times before the villains hit them 5 times with their weapons. The mechanics are action cue, dice rolling, grid movement, hidden movement, secret unit deployment, simultaneous action selection, team-based game, variable player powers.
Whew. Yeah, so Kate, this is sounds like it's nothing like Sherlock Files or,
or
Mad King Ludwig. Yeah.
She has played...
I did play Fuse, and I liked that. Fugitive, sorry. Yeah.
So she's played Fugitive.
A Fowers game. Yeah.
All right, and then the box art is the Tim Fowers style, which looks very like cartoony.
But that 1960s sharp-angled cartoons.
Yeah, I think we've compared it to Boris and Natasha.
Was that Bullwinkle?
Yeah,
Bullwinkle,
and yeah. So like it looks like a very James Bondy spy thriller with laser, big laser gun in the background and
tuxedos and ball gowns.
Yeah.
Yep. Very
you
James
can see
Bond.
The lady in the front is the same lady from Fugitive, I believe. And then I recognize the guy with the mustache and the classic Soviet fur hat. He was he's the one of the characters from Burgle Bros.
All right. Yeah. So based off of all that information, would you pull it off the shelf, BP?
Absolutely. Okay, so first and foremost, we already know I'm a big fan of this art style, but also since we've been playing Fowers games, I think we've enjoyed all of them, most of them. There was one we were not super stoked on, and obviously I don't remember what that is.
Paperback.
Paperback. Also, I do like the idea of teamed base because it's semi-cooperative at least. And I love the idea of spy stuff. Other than that, I don't know what any of these other things are. So sounds fun.
I have the added knowledge of, looking it up, making sure I know how to play. And the box itself, just like a lot of other Tim Fowers games where the box like looks like something, the box for this one is actually the divider for the game.
Oh, cool.
And it unfolds like a book almost, or a trifold. And that's what sets up between the two teams. And then there's like little slots on top where you put some of the tracking cubes so that you know where you're at in terms of how close you are to end game. So, yeah, I would, because the box itself is interesting. We do like Tim Fowers games mostly. Mm-hmm. The art style is fun.
I'd pick it up. Tim Fowers. That's it. Kate, would you pick it up?
Yeah, I would. The art style is pretty fun. Being sneaky is always fun. So, yeah, for sure.
All right. Now there's three of us to collaborate on. This should be a pretty easy one. How do we think it's played? I think it's played on a 4x4 grid. I think both teams have their own copy of the map separated by a divider.
Okay, but what does a 4x4 grid mean? I mean, obviously you've got like a map that's cut 16.
Kind of like how
four by four, right?
Burgle Bros was. Right.
Okay. But instead of three layers, there's just one, maybe.
Yeah. I think there's one, okay. One floor, but it's going to be a 4x4.
Okay. And so, and then it's obviously spies versus villains. And so there's got to be, I don't remember the mechanics. I could scroll up and find out. But so like villains are obviously trying to achieve some sort of goal to overthrow.
Hack. 8 times. I wonder if it's going to be like Burgle Bros where we are doing the chest where you had to like roll the dice on the grid to unlock it. I wonder if that's how hacking is done.
So I'm wondering if the dice going to have us, I don't know, actions based on what the numbers that we roll.
Could be, yeah.
Simultaneous action selection means I'm guessing both parties are going to choose what they're doing at the same time.
Yeah, I think we're going to reveal and it's going to be like, you know, we're going to mark it on our map where we're at. Or whoever the villains are, I assume we'd be villains for some reason.
So we could accidentally end up in the same spot because I'm pretty sure the spies don't want to end up in the same spot as the villains, whereas the villains definitely want to catch the spies. Are the spies the good people?
I just thought of that as I was saying it too. I'm not sure.
So, and because then the whole idea of sabotage and like what I was thinking of when I came up with the history bit and like, so I don't know if maybe using spies versus villains, maybe saboteurs versus...
I don't know. Anytime somebody asks that, I always think of the video with the guy that's like, I think it was either Funny or Die or College Humor. They're dressed as Nazis, basically. And the one guy's just questioning, like, we have skulls on our hats. Are we the bad guys?
I mean, obviously, using the word villains, they're supposed to be the bad guys.
Right. That one's pretty clear. Sounds like the spies, therefore the good. Heroes and villains. It's just villains and
right,
spies.
Right, right. Because are spies necessarily always the heroes?
Intelligence and counterintelligence?
I mean, yeah, it could probably be anything.
Well, so is it just completely team-based or do we have individual characters within that team? So like we have two different spies and one's better at one thing than the other, like one's more stealthy and the other one's more techie.
Yeah, I think we're going to have like it's going to be a 2v2 situation. But I think within the two, I think one will have different abilities there, too, I think. Kind of like Burgle Bros where everyone had their sort of unique.
Well, what's action cue?
So action cue is kind of like. What have we played with Action Q? It's sort like of like Colt Express. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's programming. So Colt Express would be an example, although that one's a little bit more chaotic. But with Action Q, you basically put actions in a row. And then when it's your turn, you go through the row and execute those actions.
So what if like, Kate was saying that the dice rolling was how much we might do for movement, would it be if there's just one set of dice that they have to go in and then a prescribed order and then based on whose turn it is, like, you know, the villains go first in this movement and then spies do their movement?
Like an initiative thing? I think that might be too complicated for what we've seen from his other games, but... I think it'll be more like we're each going to write down our actions and then maybe the dice roll will be like determining the outcome or like overcoming obstacles kind of thing. History of spies?
Well, so I went with sabotage because I guess I did not read the description beforehand. Otherwise, like, so on the fly, though, I definitely can pull up some James Bond. But I do want to bring up first and foremost that every time I hear sabotage, or I say sabotage, I have the Beastie Boys going through my head.
There's been a lot of Beastie Boys the last couple of days.
I have to get that out. When I was like, well, sabotage, like having no idea what it was. I was like, what? Okay, specifically, I mean, I knew what sabotage was and meant, but I wanted to like get the dictionary definition so I could better prepare. And of course, one of the elements as I was reading through the Webster's definition was especially the idea of workers, right, sabotaging or somehow destroying their usually machines that would do their work. And that immediately made me think of the Luddites, which just in brief, those were early 19th century previous workshop owners who, right, were skilled craftsmen, usually belonging to guilds that produced goods before being, of course, replaced by industrialization and factories. And so named after a guy named Ned Ludd, who would go around And basically create military actions to kind of overthrow early industrialists and factory workers. So kind of cool little history, but obviously very different from how this game's going to be played. It's okay, though, because I am a big James Bond fan, and I actually bring up James Bond in some of my classes when I'm trying to help describe like the European cultural effects of the Cold War. And so James Bond, right, Fleming.
Ian Fleming
first came out. The first novel, I believe, was produced in 53. Dr. No, I think, was just a few years later. It was the first movie, not the first book. I want to say Her Majesty's Secret Service was the first
Casino
book.
Casino Royale was actually
the first book. Casino Royale, right. Yep. Was the first book in 53. But that just, it encapsulates how the Cold War really structured, not just, right, being able to infiltrate on other side, which you can see definitely readily happening throughout World War II. For the Cold War, this manifested itself in so many, you know, radio dramas, TV dramas, dime novels. And of course, one of the things we can see that encapsulates all of this is James Bond. And especially when you think about how James Bond continues, even in our minds, this fascination with the idea of spying, of infiltration, of overthrowing evil, thwarting evil plans, if you will. And it's super interesting to trace as a kind of Western cultural or even almost global cultural phenomenon, how James Bond and the villains change throughout time, right? Because like definitely the Sean Connery, Roger Moore sets were always like usually some sort of Russian or communist.
Well, yeah, obviously.
And then they start to change after that once the Cold War ends. So it's just really interesting because obviously humanity, we are fascinated by this idea of going undercover to overthrow what obviously one side sees as something evil.
Yeah.
Well, if they have skulls on their hat, they're probably evil.
Well, I'm gonna say, at least in James Bond movies, we've definitely moved from fighting communists to fighting like terrorists.
Yeah, terrorists.
Yeah. The real question of the podcast then, who is the best James Bond and why is it Sean Connery?
It's Roger Moore.
Oh, God. Guess we're getting divorced over here.
So how are we going to play this game?
All right. So the game is played with two teams. Which I think we've now said like four times. The spies are trying to infiltrate the volcano fortress of the other team, the villains, and deactivate their doomsday devices. The villains are trying to use their weapons and gadgets to neutralize them. The teams are separated by a screen with their own maps of the fortress, and the villains win once they hit the spies five times, and the spies win once they hack the doomsday machines eight times. Each side's going to set up their map. This can be done variably or per the recommendations in the intro setup, which is what we're going to use. So the maps are going to be set up the same exact way. So there's going to be walls, doomsday devices, and generators, and they will be set up the same on both maps. So everyone's going to know where the doomsday devices are, where the generators are, and where the walls are. At this point, it's going to be played in a series of rounds, and each round is going to be broken up into four phases. So one of the villains is going to roll their four dice, and you're going to declare what they rolled, and all players are going to match those values. So everybody is going to start each round with the same dice values. Then we're going to plan our actions. So every player is going to have their own set of action tiles, and they're going to play those action tiles, program them out how they want to go, and then they're going to put the dice on them. So one of the examples is the move action. The move action, which has to have a die of 1 through 4, and it has arrows on it, basically pointing north, south, east, and west. And you're going to take your die with a value of 1 through 4, and you're going to put it on the direction that you want to move. And that'll indicate that you've kind of paid for it. Some dice will say, hey, you need sum of 7, or you need specific type of dice in order to perform that action. And then we can also unlock additional actions by earning unlock tokens. And then spies can also match up dice in order to get those as well. And you can earn advanced actions. And then without declaring, players are going to use, there's also cubes that will let us modify. And you're not going to declare those to let the other team know. And those are slide cubes and modify cubes. So the modify will let you increase or decrease a die value by one, and the slide cube will let you move your character one space per cube that you play. So then we're going to execute the action. So starting with the villains, each of the players is going to perform all their actions. So villain one will do all of their actions, and then villain two will do all of their actions. When it's the villain's turn, it never has to go the same player. So like if BP and I are the villains, BP doesn't always have to start. But before we can move the other player, BP would have to finish all of her actions first. To execute an action, you declare it. So some of the actions will have speech bubbles on them. So you have to say out loud what that speech bubble is so that players can know. Not every action has a speech bubble. So you just do that action, but the other team doesn't know what you've done. Target it. So some actions will target their own room, another room, or multiple rooms, and then resolve it. Villains and spies will all have a move, build, or passive actions. The spies will also have a hack and scan or hack action and a scan action. And then villains will have a reveal action and an attack action. As the villain gets hit, the spies will earn modify or slide tokens. And when the spies get hacks, the villains will earn modify tokens. And then clean up, each player returns all their executed action tiles to their hand, their placed dice into their player board, and any unplaced unlock markers to their team supply. And then we go on to the next round. So we just do that until heroes or the spies get their 8 hacks or the villains get their 5 hits. Those are all the rules.
Let's play.
We just finished a game of Sabotage. To recap, Kiwi and BP, the spies, won by getting all the hacks done, and Eric and Kate, the villains, lost, needing 2 more hits. So, winning strategy.
Do what I always do. Be unpredictable. once we figured out that you got unlocks from scanning, we tried to scan more, but just be smart about where we scanned.
Trying to throw you off with our scans.
Yeah, so like once we got the thermo and we were able to scan where we weren't, try to use that a little bit more. And then when we picked our rows and columns, not necessarily like where do we think they are, but a lot of it was where we think we thought you might think that we were.
Yeah. Yeah, once we figured out you were doing that, we kind of countered it, but we didn't realize that thermo ability was a thing, so we were very confused for a while.
So that's I think that's kind of what, and then tried to be in different places on the map, like try not to be in the same quadrant or the same half so that we weren't like bunched up, try to stay spread out.
Yeah, I think
we did that by default, like just also trying to figure out where you guys were, then we each split up to.
Yeah, it was kind of like split out to try to find you, but then we kind of had to converge to get one of you. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it could, when that happened, then we'd go to the other side of the map and we'd have a hard time chasing you back down the other side.
But your tear gas was pretty
My
nice.
Other strategy was to throw a lot of tear gas.
Which was effective.
It was, but the problem is that's all I could ever do. So like all those rounds I threw tear gas, that was my only move.
A little bit more effective than stun gunning at random.
Yeah, and then, of course, sometimes the dice didn't favor us. We just threw stun guns where we could.
Yeah.
So we weren't terribly coordinated at the start, especially. But what did you think of the theme, BP?
I mean, I definitely feel like we were, one, definitely on 2 different teams, and we had the 2 different objectives. I mean, I felt I was kind of hunting down some villains and trying to disrupt them. I wasn't always the stealthiest. I think I got stun gunned the most.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I got like the spies and villains theme from it, but I definitely got like the trying to sneak around type feeling, like do stuff while other people are trying to find me.
So a sabotage-y feeling.
Yeah, I guess it didn't really feel like as villains, like up to something like devious. It was just like that we were also trying to sabotage you guys from finding us.
I forgot we were the villains until we just read that recap, because it felt like we were trying to stop you from doing the sabotage.
Yeah. I think like the way the theme is written out, like I forget who brought it up at the beginning, but you were talking about like, you know, as the villains, you weren't like trying to do something. you were just trying to stop us, which right. I feel like maybe if the villains were also trying to like, maybe, you know, the villains are trying to, you know, upload data to the Doomsday Machine in order to make it fire.
Right.
And we're trying to, you know, our hacks kind of like make that go away, but your uploading makes it go the other way. I feel like that gets more of the dramatic, like
spy versus villain.
Yeah. End of movie battle where, you know, we're throwing the thumbstick around. Yeah.
Yeah. Doomsday clock.
Yeah. It was just like a little off. It didn't quite be like the story, but I mean, it did kind of capture the whole, like, yeah, you did feel like you were as a sabotage mission. Mm-hmm. Just maybe the sides were kind of reversed from what it felt like.
All the actions were certainly related.
So. Yeah. But I mean, like, our villain actions were pretty villainous, you know. We had sharks and rocket launchers. Yeah,
the land shark and rocket launcher, those were pretty cool.
Yeah, though so we never could unlock never them. But what about the art, BP?
I think, I mean, it's the same as most other. I think it mostly reminds me of the Burkle Bros in, you know, each room had like its iconography, almost like Clue-esque, you know, like the, like you said, the mission silo, right, had the rocket in it. So there were definitely clues to allow you to let you know, but it carried on that same Fowers art theme of being, right, kind of that early 1960s, early 1970s kind of cartoon-esque. And I think with all of his games, I mean, maybe paperback, not so much, although it still had that cool art on the cards. Like, everything's pretty simplistic and straightforward. Do you know what I mean?
Kate, what do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know that it really helped or took away from the game in at all. I can't see the cover that also serves as a divider between the two sides, but that sounds pretty right. neat.
I don't think it's as strong as Burkle Bros or Fugitive. I feel like the art was a little, yeah, this is more subdued. Like, I know when we played the Fugitive the other day, the first thing you said was like, these cards are really cool. Yeah. So I don't know that I quite had that same like punch that the Fugitive did, but.
But do you feel that's too, like, the Fugitive is definitely, like, I feel like we've said this in the past with games that are very, like, deck builder heavy or whatever. Like, I mean, that's all you have are the cards. So you want them to be more artistic, where there's already kind of a lot going on with this game. So maybe you do want to peel back a little bit on some of the.
I think especially the player boards could have been.
Yeah.
More. I mean, it's a lot of white space in there that could have been something.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the action cards, like, they weren't, like, the action bits weren't too busy. You had the little bit of text to kind of describe what they did and then kind of the symbol on it. So that was nice. But then, yeah, I agree with you guys. Like, you know, I just noticed that on the nursery, it's got the, what's the plant from Little Shop of Horrors? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, that's in the nursery.
Yeah.
Venus flytrap.
Yeah, and there's like a nice looking like cat with a sailor hat is in the gallery. So like there is fun stuff in it, but you know. No,
it's only the fun artwork style. And like I don't think they should have done more on the board or it would have been too busy, or even some of the cards. I think the player kind of action mat would have been the spot they could have done something cool with. And I am looking at a picture of the box divider, and that's pretty cool.
That is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The colors on the cards bother me a little bit, like, but maybe it might just be the way we're playing it. If we had the physical ones, I don't know, like the white text is hard to read.
I think it's a fair assessment. Mechanics, Kiwi.
So I do enjoy games with programming. So we see it with Cult Express. Mechs and Minions was another one where you program stuff. Quirky Circuits is another one I would like to try because you program stuff in that one too. So like you have this plan and then the plan goes to hell real quick when other people go in front of you because you think you're going to be one place or they're going to be one place and you do other things. And then that kind of either takes away actions or, you know, because there were a number of rounds where you guys tear gassed the places with the Doomsday device. And then, you know, we lost an action essentially because of that, which I didn't think normally I would be upset about, you know. Here I have this action and now I can't use it anymore. But for whatever reason in this game, like it really didn't bother me because it felt thematic or, you know, with the game. So
it was also key to the game. If we couldn't stop you, you would just hack them all and be done. And I think we felt, well, we didn't really feel the opposite because we always go first. Mm-hmm. But there were times where we just missed everything. And it was like, or like we knew like, oh, they just moved in behind our actions, especially the early rounds.
I feel like this would play a lot better not over the internet. Mm.
Definitely.
And I think that's, you know, just the way the game works. So mechanically, like this game just works better, would work better in person.
So would we then have to write our secret notes to each other?
Yeah. Or like pantomime or just like point and gesture.
All charades.
Wink, wink.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do the whole catcher umpire.
Or maybe we do what Eric and I and Matt used to do way back in the day playing Axis and Allies, where we'd wander off into another room and do all our planning and then wander back because generals have days to plan. But yeah, I thought mechanically, I thought it all worked well and went with the theme.
Kate, on mechanics?
On mechanics?
Like, how do you think it all kind of fit together, the fact that you... Like, yeah. So the key things are team. This is, I think, our first team versus team game. The way that you program your actions in and then take turns. The biggest thing is that it's all hidden, so you can't really see. That's, like, the biggest mechanic of the game.
Yeah.
So, like...
Yeah, I think it was interesting to work as a team and, you know, see if we can use our actions together to help each other out. Like, you know, if I use the motion detector and then give you a clue where somebody might be to then stun gun or whatever. Yeah. And then it was tricky because, you know, certain things you were locked out of doing, like you could say like, oh, I'm going to, you know, do the motion detector.
The stun. It's like, you know, you don't have the dice to do the stun gun. So you're kind of like, a bit limited. So there were a couple of times where like, we really wanted to do like a flashlight motion detector to try to cover the most ground.
And then we realized we didn't have the dice for it.
So
yeah,
we just had the stun gun oblivion and hope we hit something.
Yeah. We ended up using a lot of modified cubes the last couple of turns. One just to use them and two just to adjust them.
I had to use them for almost all my tear gas. So
yeah,
we burned a lot on that tear gas. Yeah, the teamwork was interesting. Not being able to see anything on the other player was definitely different.
Yeah.
More like almost like Battleship.
Yeah.
I was about to say a way more interesting Battleship.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it didn't play like Battleship, but, you know, that I think it's the only game I played where you complete like no information on the opponent player's board. And then the actions were, what was interesting, though, it's like normally in the programming, like it's like you take turns going, where this one we were like, we had to try everything. And if we didn't hit you, it was like, oh no, what are they going to accomplish this round?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like the opposite of your example of like, you know, you got thwarted and you lost a round. Is like, if we missed you, it was like terrifying. Cause like, well, they're going to run around and hack everything.
Yeah. We could do three actions that are just a total waste. And then. Yeah.
Right.
BP mechanics.
I haven't talked about them yet.
No, you haven't. No. Don't think we forgot about you and mechanics.
I love mechanics. I love talking about mechanics. I liked playing the game. That's not the question. I think I'll have to agree with Kate in that I also liked the kind of team semi-co-op aspect of it. I also really liked the hidden component as well. I think it'd be really fascinating to play in person and having to do that without just like muting so the other people couldn't hear you.
All right. the rules.
So this is my complaint about all Tim Fowers games. The rule book is not great.
So halfway through the game, BP was like, you guys should open up the rule book. And I opened it up and I looked at it. I was like, nah, this looks, there were a couple, like a lot of times we were silent. I was like looking, trying to find something in the rule book over there. And I was like, I don't have a chance.
I think I said at one point, I wish there was a table of contents.
Yeah. And I think it's just like, he kind of bounces around a little bit. Uh-huh. Like he does go into somewhat chronological order, but like the way things are listed and written out, and he needs an editor. And I think that's a comment or like just somebody to look at the rule books for him. And I think that's a comment that I've made about every Tim Fowers games we've ever played.
Yeah. Like I was like looking for a couple cards to see like a clarification, and I scrolled up and down and I was like, I'm going to be here all day.
Yeah, the layout's fine. It's just the way it's written can be hard to read and figure it out. So,
and I think learning wise, it was definitely a learning curve.
Yeah, because there's a lot.
How was the learning on BP's end?
I think it was a big learning curve. It was definitely walking through some moves. It was a lot of going back and forth. I mean, I feel like the first hour almost we were in that rule book almost the whole time. Like, you guys were always like, what's going on? I'm like, Kiwi's reading the rule book. Yeah. Like,
yeah. I mean, well, I feel like it might have been a little bit easier for you because we could mute and I could talk about anything. Mm-hmm. Whereas I couldn't really, once we started the game, I couldn't really do that with Kate and Eric because if I look at their board, it changes.
Right. And that's why I was like, maybe you guys should just bring this up. It'd be easier. But yeah, it's definitely a more complex game for learning.
Well, I don't think it's just the complexity, but like you said, the fact that Kiwi was teaching the rules, but we couldn't really talk to him. It's like, there was a lot, like, I didn't know if we were doing it right or it was just really hard to kind of like go over, or like, I couldn't figure out what moves were happening, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think I had a good handle on what moves we were capable of doing, but I had no idea what you guys could do.
Yeah. And like, yeah, we didn't really understand, like, the little clips on like the cards and stuff are okay, but it didn't really tell us. I think you knew more having read the rule book. And so it was hard to, like, you know, figure out what you could do. So like, I was like, I guess they can, at one point I was like, just assume they can move anywhere on the map. So, and then
not
having the dice where we were only using the ones in the first two spots.
That's good.
Like the first three rounds, like we couldn't turn our generators on. So we pretty much had no dice the whole game. Mm-hmm. And I think that had we known that the first round we could use any of the four, we would have gotten our generators going and had a lot more options. I think that was.
At least the one good part is we were doing the same thing on our side. So it wasn't like we were doing one thing and you guys were doing the other thing. But yeah, I feel like it probably affected you guys more.
Yeah, because those generators, because like took us a long time to get two of them going. So we were playing with two dice for about half the game.
Yeah. And I never got any of the other actions that I could do. I just, the flashlight.
Yeah, because then we only had two dice, so we didn't do any of the unlocks.
Well, you did.
I got the tear gas, thankfully. But yeah, so we only unlocked our first one and I unlocked one from the second. And that was all we had unlocked. It felt like we had very limited actions. Player interaction? Kate?
Well, I think we've already talked about working as a team and then the hidden action of the other side. But yeah, again, I thought that was pretty neat. Trying to also guess what the other team was doing.
That's your first experience trying to understand what Kiwi's thinking?
Codenames, yeah. Yeah. I guess this was easier in that sense. I didn't need to like make connections with movies.
Yeah. How dare you?
BP, player interaction.
Loved it. I mean, definitely direct. So trying to figure out what you guys were trying to do, but more importantly, also to the interaction as a team. But like at one point, I mean, obviously you'll hear this. I was like, well, shouldn't we be figuring out where they're going?
There were a couple where that she was like, well, what do you think they're going to do? I was like, well, they're definitely going to tear gas here, mm-hmm. but I'm going to plan my turn like this anyway. And then there were a couple of turns where BP was like, what do you think they're going to do? And I just looked at her. I was like, I have no idea.
And we were over here concerned. Saying, what are we going to do? I have no idea. Yeah. I think on terms of the play, like your side definitely is much more of just figuring out what your own action is. Whereas ours was all about figuring out what you were going to do.
Which is so weird because
I feel like I Kate, you're probably going to say this. Sorry, I started. It's hard. That the theme makes it sound like, right, the spy should be trying to figure out what the villains are doing. And it turned out a lot vice versa.
I feel like if you swapped heroes and villains, it would almost be more thematic.
Me too.
And instead of hacking, you're like uploading data to the Doomsday machine.
But in terms of interaction as just like being fun to play, like there wasn't, maybe you guys were a bit frustrated with us taking forever to make our turns, but otherwise like it was like there wasn't too much downtime or time where we were waiting for somebody to do something. So it's pretty cool.
Well, yeah, they were waiting for us.
They were waiting for us though.
Yeah. Yeah. But I never minded.
Yeah.
Cause like I wasn't going to pressure you guys to go faster. Cause like, that's just not the way I play. But
right. I think with our group, it could be good, but with another group, it could be just something
you might need that.
Consider
timer token.
But I think a lot of like two-player games, you know, we usually talk about like as a two-player game, it has to be interactive. And really you're playing it. We're playing a two-player game with two brains per team. So you can almost play this two players instead of four players. So you could play 1v1 and just control two characters. It might be a little bit easier or maybe a little bit harder. I don't even know, because you're controlling more stuff. But in that sense, like it becomes a 1v1, and that requires interaction in order to make it like a worthwhile game.
Would you play it again, BP?
Yes.
Okay.
he asked a yes or no question.
It's true.
Thanks for podcasting. Kiwi, would you play it again?
Yeah, I would definitely play it again. I think it, the team versus team was fun. The like not knowing what the other side was doing or where their stuff was fun. Would I play, like, is this the Tim Fowers game that I would go to every time? I think it would actually be Burgle Bros. But Burgle Bros does say that it's three to five players, I think. So it is nice that while this is listed as a 4-player game on the box, I think you could play it 2 players.
I just don't think it would be as fun.
And I don't think it would be as fun either.
Yeah. I think Burgle Bros and this, you probably need 3 or 4 people.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think Burgle Bros would probably be my go-to, and then probably Sabotage if I had the 4 players.
Yeah, I could see Burgle Bros having more replayability than
because everything kind of changes. Yeah. I mean, you can do variable setup of the map. I think the replayability is there for this one too.
I think so, because it's all about the players and what they're doing. That's the fun of the game. So,
and I would definitely need to play it in person. I don't think I want to play it on Tabletop Simulator again.
Kate, would you play it again?
I would. I almost always want to play it again when I
she is of the discretion of Kiwi on games.
I also have a little bit of a competitive edge, and so I want to try again. And I'm curious about trying it from the spies side of things.
That's
right.
That would be cool. I would agree. I'd play it again. I guess if you had 4, I might play this over Burgle Bros just for something different. I think they're both different enough that they kind of have their own play. I think this one, like if I had new people, I'd probably start with Burgle Bros because this one is such a learning curve. Also probably do Burgle Bros online because it's easier to go to learn the rules and stuff. This one is definitely an in person. And I'd almost say in person, you kind of want the person teaching the game to be like not playing so they can help both sides.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's like a lot of like difficulty in getting this game up and running, but I enjoyed it enough to like try and, you know, next time we would know the rules better and understand it quicker. So
I was going to say too, that I think the way the mod was set up on Tabletop Simulator wasn't super conducive to teaching either. The game master mode, sure. But I think if we all had the pieces and we were sitting around the table, it would be easier to like point things out and teach it that way than trying to do the same thing with Tabletop Simulator. So I think the teach might be a little bit easier in real life.
Definitely.
But I feel like you could say that for a lot of games, but.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would say in general, Tim Fowler's games, they haven't been terribly, they seem pretty straightforward, but they're not too beginner friendly. Mm-hmm. This was a hard one to learn. Fugitive, apparently we had some struggles learning.
It took us 3 tries?
It took us 3 tries too. So, and then Paperback we struggled with. So it seems like they're kind of actually more advanced games.
Some of that might be the rule book as well.
I mean, they're fun. They're good games.
Yes.
But there does seem to be a struggle getting them up and running. All right, so that is Sabotage.
So if you have any recommendations for games you would like to hear our impression on, and especially if you want to invite Kate back and hear her impressions as well, send us any of those our way. You can do so at the email firstturntabletop@gmail.com or Twitter, Instagram. We are at firstturncast. And the podcasting camel sneaks around the corner and he says, please, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on all your favorite podcatchers. We're looking forward to hearing from you. Play more games. What is a deduction game?
What we're doing right now.
Trying to figure out what the fuck Kiwi is doing is deduction. So it's like every day of your life.
Say that again. I was listening to them. I was being a spy.
And then BP got ziplined like a turnigo. She's been ziplining all over the place.
Bum 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 bum